Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Good afternoon, Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Wednesday, December 12th, and we got a big show for you today, as I'll be joined by Antoine Staley from USA Today for his weekly spot here on the podcast, as well as Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM. And we talk about this past Sunday's game, the Miracle in Miami play, and of course this week's upcoming game against the Minnesota Vikings and everything in between, all about the Miami Dolphins. There's really not much news to talk about right now concerning the Dolphins. It was reported today that Ryan Tannehill will play on Sunday. It was a little doubt because that ankle that got rolled up on this past week was in rough shape, actually. But it was announced today that, you know, barring anything unforeseen happening, Tannehill will play against the Vikings. It would be an extreme. Something would really have to happen to keep him out of the game. So Tannehill will play. And the Vikings game, you know, it's going to be a tough game. They, you know, as much as everyone's ripping on them for the showing they had this past Monday night against Seattle and how they fired their offensive coordinator, they still have a lot of weapons on offense. They got a great running back in Dalvin Cook. They got, you know, top end wide receivers in Thielen and Diggs. Rudolph is a legitimate tight end, and we know how much tight ends kill Miami. And, you know, they got a quarterback who can throw it. Now, I know the offense hasn't been doing much. There's a reason they fired the offensive coordinator. I get it. But, you know, they can still move the ball and put up points. And for the Miami Dolphins, it will not be easy. This might be another game where I know the Vikings offense is struggling, but with a new offensive coordinator, you would think they might bring their A game on offense this week, and Miami might have to put up, you know, close to 30 points again to win. I don't see this being a low scoring game. I think the Vikings will get their points, and it's up to Miami to keep up and match them and eventually surpass them if they want to win. Should be interesting, but that's a few days away. So right now I'll take a quick break, and after the break I'll be joined by Antoine Staley from USA Today, and then right after that we'll be joined by Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM. During the interview, Greg's phone breaks up a little bit here and there. I just want to apologize about that up front. One of those things that happens. He's on the road. He's got a cell phone. It happens. But he can hear it well enough. So it is what it is type of deal. So everyone sit tight, and we'll be back after this.
Sinbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get authentic Miami Dolphins signed memorabilia. Sinbad Sports has had the likes of Albert Wilson, Kiko Alonso, Frank Gore, Jakeem Grant, Rashad Jones, Ricky Williams, and Cam Wake in for recent autograph signings. So when you're in South Florida, go ahead and visit Sinbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Antoine Staley from USA Today. Antoine, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am doing great. Now, obviously, we got to start off talking about the Miami Miracle, the big play that ended Sunday's game against the Patriots. What are your thoughts, I guess, overall that play? It was just an amazing moment for the organization, I think, and for the fans. Just what are your thoughts on that play?
I mean, what can you say? I mean, everybody was just surprised by this, obviously. Nobody thought that was going to happen. Usually you see those plays at the end of the game, and you're just kind of thinking, oh, well, you know, they're desperate. They're going to try it, and eventually the guy's going to get tackled, or the ball's going to get fumbled, or whatever the case may be, and the game's going to get over. But it's so that Dolphins work on it all the time. that practice really makes perfect, and they did a good job. And Kenny Drake had some room, and ended up seeing Rob Gronkowski was able to score on a just a crazy play. So yeah, I mean, kudos to them. And yeah, nope, like I say, nobody saw that coming, especially with 7 seconds left in the game.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's true that they, excuse me, they ran that play to perfection, and it was executed perfectly. You kind of wish some of the other plays in offense would be executed at that high a level because they are still on offense, still have their struggles at times. These final three games are really big, obviously, because they're fighting for a playoff spot. But I think more importantly, when it comes to the quarterback, you know, he is who he is. He's not going to be anything more or less. But these final three games, if he were to head out there and the team wins the games and he plays well, you can make the case he needs to be back in 2019. If they go out and go 1-2 or 0-3, you know, I think it's going to be a tough case to bring him back. And these final three games as a whole really will tell the fate on him. What are your thoughts on that?
I still kind of feel like Tannehill's gonna come back regardless. Just simply because as long as Yates comes back, I think I expect Tannehill to be back. But yeah, if they go 0-3, I don't know if they're going to. But if they do, yeah, they were to. There's no telling with the Dolphins at this point because we don't know what team we're getting from week to week sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't. If that case, then I would say, oh, okay, yeah, they may decide to move on, or at least they may get a little bit more serious at the quarterback position. But yeah, I wrote an article the other day about him. I think he's going to be the quarterback regardless. And some people they're not going to like it. Some people are going to like it.
Yeah, well,
just because of the way he's playing. He's playing at he's playing decent football right now. At least he's being efficient. I mean, he's not one of those he's never going to be one of those quarterbacks that's going to go out there and get you 300, 400 yards a week. That's not who Tannehill is, but at least he's not turning the football over. He's doing exactly what is being asked of him, and his teammates are doing producing plays from that as well. So yeah, I still see him being with the team no matter what at this point. But yeah, 0-3 down the stretch would definitely open some eyes and may change their perspective about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And heading back to Sunday's game, one thing that kind of surprised me were the two touchdowns by Brandon Bolden. You're there at the facility. You're in all the conferences there with the head coach. My question was this. I mean, he played great, obviously, but why was he in the game? He's the fourth string running back. Was there any reason why they put him in this week at running back and gave him snaps there? Because it just seemed odd to me that he was even in the game at running back.
Well, they practiced some plays for him. They wanted to use him. So that was planned in regardless. I mean, they decided they put some package in there for him. And Bolden, he was a decent running back in college at Mississippi, at Ole Miss. So they thought, well, you know what, we're playing the Patriots. You know, maybe time to get them involved a little bit. And that's exactly what they did. And just end up hitting a home run play the first time he touched the ball, and then end up scoring again later on in the game for another touchdown. So that was something that was planned in advance. But yeah. Apparently, we asked Adam Gase about it. It was something that they also have been working on as well.
Yeah, a little bit of luck there never hurts. And obviously it was luck because they handed him the ball twice, and each time he scored a touchdown, which I don't think anybody saw coming, really. And yeah, it was very surprising. The health of the quarterback, obviously, I think it was announced today that he will play Sunday, but the right ankle is not looking good. What have you heard about the ankle?
It's still obviously it's still bothering. We saw today he was heavily wrapped, but Gase said he's gonna play. Tannehill said he's gonna be good enough to play. So that's pretty much about it right there. Obviously nobody's really gonna be 100% right now during the course of the season. But yeah, they said they're gonna play, so I guess we're gonna have to wait and see how everything comes about on Sunday. But all indications unless something weird would have happened, Tannehill's gonna be just fine.
Yep, and of course, this Sunday they travel to Minnesota and play the Vikings. How do you think they match up here against the Vikings? Obviously, they're in a bit of flux, the Vikings. They just got rid of their offensive coordinator and such. What are your thoughts on the Vikings and this game on Sunday?
The Vikings are kind of like a lot of other teams in the league. They're better at home than they are on the road. Obviously, the Dolphins are similar in that way. As far as matching up with them, especially with no Xavier Howard, which it looks like it's probably going to be, it's going to be tough. They got two really dynamic wide receivers. They have a solid tight end, Kyle Rudolph as well. And also, they got a running game, which I think they're going to start to incorporate more with Dalvin Cook. I will say this, the Dolphins did a good job with the run against the Patriots last week. They're going to have to do even a better job, I believe, this week against the Vikings team. I think it's going to make it their mission to start running the ball a little bit more, especially considering they've not had success passing the ball that they did, which I think kind of was one of the reasons why they fired their offensive coordinator. So, I mean, look at the matchups statistically, especially with the Vikings defense. It doesn't necessarily – they don't necessarily match up very well. But you never know. We'll see how everything goes about.
As I think we said last week, you know, it's always interesting with the Miami Dolphins, and they never fail to let you down. It's always something, whether it's on the field or off the field, there's always something new. And after that game on Sunday, I think I sent you a tweet, it's always interesting because nobody saw that coming. Some of the games they've won this year, you look back at the game against the Jets, they didn't score an offensive touchdown, they won. The game 2 weeks ago against the Bills, did 175 yards of offense, they won. The game this past Sunday, obviously you got that one play at the end, but they were 1-for-7 on third down Miami. They only ran 45 offensive plays. I mean, they had no business winning any of these games, but they somehow find a way to win. So when you head into a game here, the Vikings, I agree, slowing down that passing attack without Xavier Howard going to be a challenge, to say the least. You know, you can't count them out because – road, home, they always find a way. Even on the road, the game against Cincinnati and Indianapolis, they lost them. They probably should have won them, probably both. But it's always interesting, and they hang around, really, except for the game against the Lions or so. I mean, they really haven't blown out much this year.
Yeah, they haven't. I guess you look at it like that, then, I mean, yeah, they had two games they definitely should have won. I also feel like they've also had some games where they probably should have lost. So that's the reason I kind of feel like it evens out now.
They probably should have lost against the Bills. They probably should have lost against the Patriots. And they probably should have lost against Chicago, those three. But they probably should have won against Indianapolis and against Cincinnati. So it is just about a wash any way you look at it. But they keep it entertaining. Last question for you here as we wrap up. We got three games left. The AFC, the final spot of the playoffs, looking at Tennessee, Miami, Indianapolis, and the Ravens. Those are really the four teams right now, although the Ravens still have a shot to win the North. I know that. Every week we sort of reassess this, and it seems like every week there's a big shuffle and a shakeup. Who do you see as of this week as sort of like the clubhouse leader in your mind for that sixth and final wildcard spot?
I'm still going to go with the Ravens, but even though the Colts are going to be there too, I think the Ravens and the Colts are the teams that I look towards to get those spots. The Titans, they're having some injury issues. That's the fact that they're kind of like Dolphins actually in a way. The fact that they're 7-6 is kind of surprising there as well, considering everything they've been through. I think they may finish kind of similar with I think the Dolphins are probably going to finish 8-8. I think the Titans might be kind of in the same boat there, considering their injury history. You obviously got Jack Coughlin now. They have also another tight end there. Jonnu Smith ended up going on IR. And that's always already losing to Delanie Walker at the beginning of the season against the Dolphins. So, yeah, they're kind of there up to the bare bones there as well. So, yeah, I think it's going to be definitely between the Ravens and Colts. And I may slightly go with the Ravens because of their defense, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Colts were to get in.
I'm with you on the Ravens. I'll give you a slight edge to the Ravens. The one thing I'll say about the Colts is they got a tough schedule from here on out. They got to play home against the Cowboys. Then I think they end at the Giants and at Tennessee. So that's three tough games for them that they might not be able to navigate through because even the Giants right now, they're playing really good football. Tennessee, a little bit like Miami, and of course, that final week, that Tennessee game against Indianapolis, you know, someone has to lose really there. So you got that one. The team with the easiest road, if you just look at on paper the schedule, you know, it's almost laughable. It really is Miami because they got two teams that are 4-9 on their schedule. Now, we know those teams, one probably should have won against Miami last week, and a team like Jacksonville has one side of the ball that can shut down Miami's offense easily. But on paper, just looking at the schedule, their road is not as hard as someone like Indianapolis or even Tennessee. But I do think the Ravens, though, just because Lamar Jackson really has played well, and he's making a lot of people look really dumb for not picking him before where he went.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was a clear first-round pick to begin with, but I thought a lot of teams should have given him, even the Dolphins, but I knew they were not really in love
never
with Lamar Jackson.
No.
So, I think he's going to make a ton of teams pay. I assume every team just about passed on him if you were in the first round. Even the Ravens passed on him. They ended up having to come back and get him. So, I definitely think he's going to – obviously, he's the starter right now. He's going to be long-term. They're changing up the guard now with Joe Flacco being the backup. And it's a good situation now that just in case something were to happen to Jackson, you have a veteran backup. And for Joe Flacco, who can come in and, you know, he can produce there in Baltimore.
Yep, absolutely. So thanks so much for a few moments of your time tonight, Antoine. Everyone, be sure to read the work of Antoine Staley at DolphinsWire.USAToday.com and follow him on Twitter at Antoine Staley. Thanks so much, Antoine, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Dan. Take care.
You too. Have a good one.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one website for all things Miami Dolphins. With the award-winning DolphinsTalk.com podcast, in-depth video breakdowns and analysis, as well as daily articles all year round, DolphinsTalk.com is the place to go for all of your Miami Dolphins needs. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DolphinsTalk and to visit our website, DolphinsTalk.com, each and every day.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM. Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mike, and I think everybody's doing a little bit better. Got a little more giddy up in the step after that Miami miracle on Sunday against the Patriots.
Yep, absolutely. That was a heck of an ending, and it gave the fan base a little bit of life, a little bit of hope here heading into these final three games. I guess to start off with that play, where were you when it happened, and where did you see it from?
Yeah, so typically my Sunday routine is I do the Aquin Orange pregame show on 7 on the ticket from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then I head home to watch the game. And so in this instance, I'm at home, and, you know, I always watch to the very end of the game, regardless of, you know, whether they're winning or losing. But I was about to kind of get on with the rest of my day, so to speak, and I had resigned myself, as I'm sure a lot of fans had, to the fact that the Dolphins came close but couldn't pull off the victory against the big, bad New England Patriots. And so, you know, I'm watching to the end, but I'm kind of in the middle of, you know, going to do something with some friends. That's when I'm about to leave the house. And then that play happens, and it happened so quickly and so efficiently, and they executed it so well, that I was stunned like everybody else, but I was exhilarated. I was excited. And so, sure enough, I mean, I had to go back and rewind my DVR and watch it a bunch of times. And I wanted to see what everybody was saying on social media. So I went from essentially about to leave the house to sticking around for another 30, 45 minutes because I think, like everybody else, I just kind of wanted to continue to relish the moment.
Absolutely. I was the same way. I was on the couch and I was getting ready to walk upstairs to put in some food and have a meal. And I'm just sitting there standing around. Okay, here's the kickoff. Okay, here's the play. When he got to about the 20 or so, I'm like, hold on, turn off the stove. I'm like, because I was just shocked that, it actually worked. Because you see that play at least once a week in some game, and it never works. It never works. And for it to actually work really is a testament that they actually do work on that play every week, as they say, prior to the game on either Saturday or Friday. So, yeah, I mean, it was literally a miracle. And sort of leads it into my next question. Head coach Adam Gase, he's got him at 7-6, and they're still fighting for a playoff spot with all the guys they've lost this year. What's your thoughts on how he's been as the head coach this year for Miami?
Yeah, it's really kind of a complicated, involved multi-layered question there, because, you know, in one regard, you could say, hey, Adam Gase, he's leading a team that is 29th in total defense and 29th in total offense. And certainly he's more responsible for that offense than, you know, Matt Burke on the defensive side of the ball. But either way, I mean, the team, by the metrics, has not been a very good team, yet they've still won 7 games. They're still firmly in the mix for the AFC wild card, and they've overcome all those injuries. So I do think the narrative has shifted over the course of the season, where Adam Gase has gotten criticism. He's deserved some criticism, but at the same time, he needs credit for the fact that the team has found ways to win. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't complain about how they win. Certainly the Buffalo win, hey, if Charles Clay's not going to make a catch, then, hey, you go with it, you take the W. And if a miracle needs to happen to beat New England, then that's the way it works. So, you know, I think the narrative has changed on Adam Gase. These last couple of wins have come, and with the way they're headed, it looks like he's done a pretty good job. If they, you know, finish 0-3 to end the season, then we may be speaking a different tune coming up in just a few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been saying that on the podcast all week. It was a great moment on Sunday, but these final 3 games, I think, are going to pretty much be a big factor in the fate of the head coach and the quarterback, because if they go 1-2 or if they go 0-3, you know, this play that happened this past Sunday, it's going to seem like it was 6 months away, because that play will be in the – I mean, people won't even remember that play. They're just going to remember how they lost at the end of the year when they had a chance to get in the playoffs. So Tannehill, you know, he's missed about 5 games this year. But I mean, to me, he's been the same guy he's always been. He really hasn't been great. He's been just okay. I think the final 3 games for him really will tell the fate of his season. What are your thoughts on his play this year? And possibly in 2019, him being on the team, what do you think the odds are? I know a lot of it is going to be dependent on these final games, though.
Yeah. Part of the story is still to be told, to be sure. But, you know, I tend to side with you that I haven't seen anything dramatically different from Ryan Tannehill. Now, if you break down the numbers, and certainly the 3 games he's been back, he's been really efficient. You know, the touchdown interception ratio looks excellent, 9-1. And his passer rating is great, you know, depending on how much, you know, stock you put into that. But I still feel like, you know, if we're going to look at the way Adam Gase is coached with Tannehill, at the end of the Indianapolis Colts game, there's clearly confidence in Tannehill to allow him to throw the football in that key third down. So that's telling to me. Also, you look in that Bills game, he threw for 2 more yards than Josh Allen ran for in the game. You know, those 2 games, I think he was solid, but not spectacular. I have to say this, that I thought he played a really good game against the Patriots, and I think the fact that he was able to overcome the ankle injury and continue his solid play in the second half was really good to see. So, you know, I think we get critical of Ryan Tannehill, and sometimes deservedly so, but I think he played really well against the Patriots and deserves credit. At the same time, I've still been in the line of thinking that you need to move on from him in the offseason. Well, with that being said, I have heard a compelling argument to keep him around while you draft a quarterback high. And
$26 million, that's a lot, though. $26 million on the cap, that's a lot for someone like him. I just think it is.
I don't disagree with that. And quite frankly, I'd like to see them move on.
Yep.
But, you know, with the way Adam Gase has approached this, you know, part of me says that you get the feeling he's going to return, whether he should or not.
Yeah, and that's where I think the final 3 games are going to be a huge factor. Because if they, even if they win, say they win 2 or 3, but just missed, say they win those 2 or 3 and they miss the playoffs, you can make a case, well, you know what? Okay, that's pretty good. We can buy into him coming back. If they look bad, though, in these final 3, go 1-2 or 0-3, it's like, and someone might have to overrule the head coach if he will be the head coach next year and be like, no, we can't keep doing this. Because Tannehill's a guy who can be replaced. I know some people don't think it would be. I just think he can be replaced. And I don't see how you pay him $26 million, number one. And number two, why would he take a pay cut when there's numerous other teams out there who probably would pay him more than maybe taking a pay cut would pay him?
Yeah, I agree. And I do think there'll be decide to move on, but you're right. I mean, that cap hit is
enormous.
Something that yeah, to me, that if you look at the way this has been handled, for those who I've had conversations already this week with, you know, people, other, you know, people who cover the Miami Dolphins, saying, hey, and, you know, the numbers have been good with Adam Gase. And to that, I say, okay, I mean, you could make that argument if you want, because, you know, with the cap ramifications and who else you're going to get that's out there that's available and it's not going to be draftable. This is the problem I've had with it all along, is the lack of foresight from the organization standpoint. You know, the front office is paid a lot of money to know when the quarterback class is likely to be good and when it's not going to be good. And so, you know, last season, by all accounts, the last offseason was when you should go for a quarterback. And, you know, time will tell how all those QBs, the five that were drafted in the first round, pan out. But, you know, all along, they should have been investing in a younger guy that they could groom behind Tannehill. And so now that all of a sudden, you know, push comes to shove, you got to make a decision. I still think you need to do that. But I also think that they're probably a season or two too late, and this may hinder the future growth of the team because of it.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. They should have had some – it seems like they just ignore that spot, which I don't know how you ignore the quarterback position, because it's so important in the game. But they just have seemed to ignore it year after year, and now they're sort of stuck. And it'll be really interesting how it plays out, because if they're just asking him to be efficient and not really win games, and we're not going to put a lot on his plate, which we saw this year at the end of the game against Indianapolis, like you said – that is, you can find guys like that out there. You don't have to pay someone 26 minutes. So it'll be real interesting. I think the final three games for him is by far the most important, for anybody on this whole team, including the head coach, because if he plays great, he'll be back. If he doesn't play great, it's going to be tough to make a case to bring him back. Speaking of the final three games, you got, Minnesota, Jacksonville, and the Bills. Two of those teams are 4-9. And the other is Minnesota, who's a little bit of a mess right now. What are your thoughts on these games? What do you think they're going to do here in this stretch?
Well, certainly, you know, if we talked about this stretch before the season began, it looks a lot more manageable now than it
Absolutely.
Did then.
Yep.
So it just goes to show you never know in the NFL. At the same time, you know, I think Minnesota is going to be desperate for a win, but that looks a lot more winnable than it did even – I am a little concerned about this game just by seeing the Dolphins play on the road. They've been really ineffective on the road for whatever reason. So they're going to have to turn that trend around. Jacksonville does seem like a very good team at home and all the problems they've had. And I may argue that I think this Minnesota game is going to be difficult, but the Bills game really scares me as well.
It does.
I mean, just because of the cold weather. Late in the year, Josh Allen, he's certainly not a finished product, but I was impressed with him a couple of weeks ago down here in Miami. So I think that could be a real challenge, just considering it's on the road, the cold weather, the history there, and the Bills' penchant for, you know, creating problems for the Dolphins, not just there in that stadium, but also late in the season when it's a meaningful game for Miami.
Yep, and the Vikings game, I'm afraid of this game, because if there's no Xavier Howard, which it appears he probably won't play, how are they going to slow down those Minnesota wide receivers? Because they are very good at that spot, and I think that might be a challenge there. And, yeah, I want nothing to do with the Bills. Honestly, that last game, how they lost the game to the Bills, and they had over 400 yards of offense, and Miami had 175 yards of total offense for the entire game. How they lost that game to the Bills, I have no idea. I mean, they really played Miami tough. So that'll be real interesting to see. Last thing here as we wrap up, every time I have you on, we always end it by talking about Syracuse football. And when I had you on back, I think like in August or so, we said, you know, hopefully they get to 6 wins. We'll see how it goes. Well, they surpassed our expectations by a mile. And now they got a big game coming up here against West Virginia. What's your thoughts on SU's season? And the thoughts on the bowl game against West Virginia?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I remember the conversation we had and kind of poking fun at the lack of success in recent years and say 6 wins would be terrific. And the way that they've played this season, you know, by the end of it, you look at the fact that, you know, they lose to Clemson, who's in the playoff. They lose to Notre Dame, who's in the playoff. And then Pitt, who, you know, was in the ACC title game, albeit, you know, not very competitive in that game. But man, I mean, those are the only three losses. It was a terrific season. Eric Dungy was a ton of fun to watch, and that offense and the defense is catching up in that system. And so a couple of reactions. One, yes, awesome season. Two, I'm just thrilled that Dino Babers hasn't been linked to any of these job openings here.
Yep. So I know.
Yeah, I hope he sticks around Central New York for a long time. And then as far as the bowl is concerned, I think it's just terrific that they got the bowl. They're coming to Orlando. And West Virginia is a cool matchup. And, you know, not that I wouldn't want to see the best players playing, but I like their chances now that we know Will Greer
exactly.
and offensive linemen.
The offensive lineman's not playing. Yeah. And I don't even care about that because that's their problem, not our problem. If they don't want to play, okay, fine. But yeah, it was a great year. I think quarterback wise, we're going to be in great hands next year. I think DeVito, who I mentioned to you back like in August, once he gets every rep in practice, he's going to be fine because he really won the Florida State game and he won the game against North Carolina. It wasn't Eric Dungy because he was out in those games. He got hurt and he was out of the games. So he's going to be fine there, quarterback, and he is recruiting a lot better, higher quality guys. He recruited 3 4-star linebackers here in a week. We haven't had 1 4-star linebacker in about 10 years. He got 3 in a week. So recruiting's up. The talent level's up, and I think the future is really bright for SU football as long as he stays. I mean, he'll be here next year. After that, I think all bets are off. But we'll see. But, yeah, he is the key to that.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and you're right. It's so encouraging to see the recruiting class they're building. And DeVito, I think, you know, one of the things that Dino Babers needs more credit for is the way he had – the absolute pulse of the team and specifically the quarterback position, because, you know, that North Carolina game, he decided to switch to DeVito and it worked, and he went back to Dungy, you know, the next week, and they didn't miss a beat. And so, I mean, that's a rare talent to have as a coach, to be able to make sure with the egos involved there that nothing gets frayed. And so, yeah, I think he's done a masterful job. Hope he sticks around for a long time. And hope SU continues to bring the money to the table to make sure he's around, because with him in football, you know, Bayon and basketball, I mean, they're rolling around real nice right now.
You're doing really good right now, and I love seeing your picture online where you won your bet against Troy Stratford and you made him your number 44. That was great. Troy Stratford is a legend of Boston College. He really is. He was a great player in college, amazing Boston College. And they won that game at you so easily, and I was shocked that they won it that easily. It was just great to see Troy in number 44.
It was. And you know what? It was just as good that I didn't have to wear his old Boston College jersey. So it was double the pleasure there. I didn't have to wear that jersey because, you know, I don't know what kind of condition it was in. And then he was hoping I'd forget about our bet.
Yeah, no way.
I had that 44 ready to go.
That's awesome. Greg, thanks so much for a few moments of your time today. Everyone, be sure to follow Greg Likens on Twitter at Greg Likens and listen to him on 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM. Greg, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Sounds good, Mike. Always good to talk to you.
Have a good night.
The DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network brings you only the best podcasts covering the Miami Dolphins. With fins up, fans down, welcome to Perfectville, the same old Dolphins show, the Landon and Jeff show, as well as DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast. You will get in-depth coverage from diehard passionate Miami Dolphins fans each and every week. Be sure to listen to all these great podcasts and check them out at DolphinsTalk.com.
Once again, I would like to thank Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket and 560 WQAM, as well as Antoine Staley from USA Today for joining me on the podcast. Sorry about Greg Likens' phone breaking up there a bit at times. One of those things that happens. He's on the road, cell phone. You know, it happens. What are you going to do? So let's get to this week's pick segment. Now, last week, Landon and Jeff went 1-2, but I also went 1-2. So I still hold a one-game lead with 3 weeks left. So I'm barely hanging on, but I'm still in the lead here to win this bet. So let's get to this week's picks. Game number one. Give me the Dallas Cowboys +3 at Indianapolis. I think the Cowboys are the better team across the board. They're the more physical team. And just overall, I like the way the Cowboys are playing. Now, look, it's tough to say because I'm not a big Cowboys fan. Always like to see the Cowboys lose. But give them credit. They have drafted very well the past few years. And they have a nice, solid team across the board. And they're winning games every which way. I think the Colts, they've come back to earth a little bit here the past few weeks. They did have a big win last week at Houston. But I like the Cowboys here +3. So give me the Cowboys +3 on the road. Game number two. And just because I don't think they're going to have two bad weeks in a row, give me New England -2 at Pittsburgh. I think, one, Pittsburgh's a mess. From top to bottom, they're a mess. Two, their head coach really isn't very good. I have no faith in Mike Tomlin. I actually just don't think he's that good. And I just don't have I just don't have faith in them, just like I said. And I think the Patriots, that loss last week, it has been sitting with them all week. And I think they're going to come out and look to thump somebody. And I think it just happens to be in Pittsburgh. So give me the Patriots -2 against Pittsburgh. And plus, they never lose to Pittsburgh, it seems like, or rarely lose to them. So I just like the Patriots on the road. Game number three. And this pick to me is almost a layup. Give me Jacksonville -7. Over Washington, and this pick is just based on the fact Washington doesn't have a quarterback right now, and they're not going to move the ball. And Jacksonville is still Jacksonville on defense, so even if they score 10 points, I think I'll cover, because I don't think Washington will score once. So Jacksonville here, it's a high number for them because they just don't put up a lot of points, but I see Washington doing nothing on offense at all. So my three games for this week are Dallas +3, New England -2, Jacksonville -7. To hear who Landon and Jeff picked, tune in to their podcast, The Landon and Jeff Show, which is up on the website at this time. So that's all for today's show. Tomorrow's show will be hosted by Stephen Masso. Be sure to check out the website, DolphinsTalk.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at DolphinsTalk. And if you want to reach out to me via email, you can send me an email at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. Everyone have a great day, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.